Welcome back. I'm Henry Reingen, and with me is Steve Elzinga, and we're talking about influence-wrecking habits. And, you know, it's interesting that we're starting this fight off with not walking with God as still foundational in being influential, and the habit of not walking with God will hurt your influence.
And, you know, a habit of walking with God, what is a walk with God? In its simplest form, it's simply talking and listening repeatedly to God. Talking, prayer, listening, the best way to listen to God, more sure way to listen is through God's Word. If you're going to influence people from a biblical point of view, you have to have, what is God saying to me in
right.
prayer? What does God say in His Word? I have something to influence people with. Otherwise, you're influencing people with the world or whatever you just read in the newspaper or some book that you read. And, you know, we're Christian Leaders Institute.
Right.
The Christian part. We want people to be followers of Christ. So ultimately, the influence, the kind of influence we want is a God-centered influence. And if you don't have a walk with God, you can't have a God-centered influence.
Well, let's keep going.
All right.
Being a dream killer or a dream puffer. Interesting. So, I don't know if you've ever met somebody like that. Like, you've got an idea, and you're all enthusiastic mm-hmm. about it, and the first thing they say is the one possible chink in the armor of that idea, and they just lay it right in. You know, that sounds really good, but have you thought about that?
Okay. They find one piece that kills the whole dream.
Right.
It's like you just built a nice thing out of cards, and they take the bottom one and the whole thing crashes. And then you walk away deflated.
Or the other one, the puffer, dream puffer, you know, someone who hears what you're saying, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're thinking of ways that it just expands, possibly even beyond your gifts, and they possibly know that. But it's like a form of flattery.
And they almost take over your dream, right? You had this
yeah.
small little dream, and then they turn it into this monster dream of theirs that
right.
you couldn't possibly do. And
right.
again, where's the focus?
Right.
It just shifted from me. I had the dream. And now you all of a sudden, it's almost a one-upmanship too.
Yes.
You think of, I mean, I even have a dream and you one-up my own dream. And it's not even your dream.
It's like a dream stealer.
Yeah.
It's always like you could be dream killer, dream stealer, dream puffer. It's
right. Yeah.
Proverbs.
And when an influencer is really trying to help people get a dream, and if someone already has one, you don't want to kill it.
Right.
You want to, you know, blow the coals.
Yeah.
You know, blow this ember and make it into something. Mm-hmm. You know, Timothy was, you know, fan the flame of something that's in you. People have dreams, but most people are totally, absolutely insecure about their dream. And so when they meet someone, what they need is just a little encouragement.
Yeah.
The criticisms can be done in a different context.
Right. The Proverbs 13:12, heart deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life.
Right.
You know, so if you can be the one that is bringing that longing, that dream,
right.
and advancing
right.
it and encouraging
right.
it.
So we think we're helping people by pointing out the few flaws we see in their dream.
Right.
But we're just making their heart sick.
Right.
Right? We're just, oh, you can't get that dream right now. There's all these obstacles. So now I'm
right.
deferring. The other guy, he's excited. He's
yeah.
excited about what he's going to do. He feels he's on the cusp of something. And then
right.
you come and go, well, you know, if that does happen, it won't happen for at least another year. And you just totally
yeah.
deflated.
Yeah. Or deferred could be the puffing thing. It's my, you know, in a sense, you're still distracting.
Yeah.
You're taking the attention off of them.
Right.
Why do you think that makes someone less influential?
Well, I think a lot of times we think when we give our little criticism that, you know, we're being so smart. You know, we can see the whole, and
right.
we're being really smart. And if you would just fix these three things, it would help you. So we think we're trying to help them. But really, again, I think it's always coming back to, I'm trying to steal the attention.
Yeah.
So if it's about me and how smart I... You have a dream, but I'm smarter than you because I can see all the things that you need to make this happen. It Yeah, I guess it is stealing or killing your dream and is putting it on me. And then for most people, they have a dream and they haven't done it because they haven't been encouraged enough to go through with it.
Right.
They feel insecure about it. They already feel that there might be things that make the dream impossible already. They don't need three more things from you. What they need is someone to come along and say, now, there's probably obstacles to this, but I think you can do it. Mm-hmm. I think this is a good dream. Why don't we, in a coaching kind of manner, why don't I can help you actually maybe follow your dream or tweak it or make it whatever it needs to be successful. Okay, now I'm willing to follow you.
Right.
But if all you're going to do is torpedo my dream, I got 1,000 people that can do that for me.
How would you understand this in the coachifying way, the life coach minister way? If somebody came to you and, you know, and let's say they were a referral from the pastor or somebody came and said, you know, I'm just really struggling. I have an idea here. I'm not confident in this. So I'd like to meet with you and get some coaching. How would you approach this?
Well, if it was the person that had the dream or a person that's always killing the dream.
Well, well, let's just say the person who had the dream.
Okay, if a person has a dream, that's, you know, that's what you're trying to, first of all, as a coach, do. What area in your life do you want to focus any energy on if they have one?
Right.
Wow. You're way ahead of most people that you have one and you can even identify.
Right.
So number one, I want to congratulate the person for having this dream. Whatever, I don't care even if it's a lousy dream.
Right.
That you can articulate a dream and say this is what you want. You're leaps and bounds ahead of everyone else.
Right.
So number one, you're encouraging.
Right. Yeah.
Number two, okay, let's talk more about what this dream means, you know, what some of the pieces might be, the things that would have to happen. Let's break it down into, you know, step one, what do you want to do about it? So all the coaching stuff we talk about in the coaching class is what you would do. It's like we have to break this thing down into something manageable. Where do you want to start? How quickly do you want to go through this? How important is this? So all those coaching questions that can help someone sort of pursue that dream.
Now, what happens if you come, someone comes to you and they are a dream killer or a dream puffer? In fact, that was on their list of things that they want to be more influential, and they're coming to the influence coach.
Okay.
How would you approach that one?
Well, then I'd ask him, okay, let's try to identify in your life when you do this.
Okay.
When do you do this? What do you see the areas of your... Because if you don't see it, then it's not going to happen. So you might have to talk to people. If you suspect that maybe you're this kind of person, talk to your kids, talk to your wife.
Right.
Ask them about the time that you did that.
Right.
If you start hearing 5, 6, 7 people tell you the same story of how you stole their dream or how you killed their dream, you now have 5 stories that can help you prevent you from doing that next time. So then, okay, if this is your natural habit, because it makes you feel good to do it, okay, let's come up with a plan. Over the next 2 weeks, I want you to find certain areas, you know, you're talking to someone, when someone shared a dream, and then what did you do? And then in 2 weeks from now, we're going to talk about, I want you to tell me what you did. I want you to look for incidences where people are sharing sort of a dream, and then what you did.
Right.
So now while we're doing, all I'm trying to do is to help bring attention to you that this is you. And first you need to realize that this is what you're doing, and then how can you stop it?
So just to reflect on this, where do you think you might do, you know, again, we're talking various principles here, but occasionally let's shoot it over to you. So where do you think you are a dream killer or a dream stealer or a dream puffer? You know, maybe as a parent, you know, you have children, and that's an easy relationship to do this in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, your dream isn't good enough, kid. You'll never make a living doing that.
Right, or the parents' dream for the children is what gets superimposed on them, and they don't get to have their own dream, family honor, and all that. You know, in a lot of ways, this seems like we would never do it, but in many ways, in subtle ways, it's easy to do.
Well, and we want to protect our kids. If we see one of our children going in a career that doesn't pay,
you know, artists, they call it starving artists for a good reason.
Yeah, and we're subtly always kicking their dream.
Right.
You know, only 1 out of 100 make it in the thing you want to do, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
And you're probably not one of them. Instead, you know,
there's a lot of issues with this one.
Yeah. Instead of letting, and again, it's letting, you know, coaching is more about, you know, I'm going to let you fail if you want
to. Right.
Right. And maybe the only way that your child is going to learn that this is a closed door is to let the door hit him in the face.
Right.
And you can't protect him from that. And if you try to, then he blames you for the rest of your life. You know, I wanted to do this and you negated
right.
it. And, you know, and I wish I
did. Well, I've noticed that's true. If one of your ideas really works, then what happens, they never really feel that great about the idea either.
No, because it's your dream.
It's your dream.
They're living, yeah. and they never find satisfaction in it.
Right. Very, very interesting. Giving people a hard time. Now, it's interesting. In my own life, I know some people that you cannot see them, and they don't right away use humor or something or point something out. Ah, I see you haven't lost any weight in the last year. You know,
yeah.
it can be 100 different areas. It's meant sometimes to be humorous.
You mean like critical people always find something.
They find, yeah, they sort of...
negative. And
right. And you probably can't remember hardly a conversation where you're just... encouraging. It's just, in fact, you when you see them in the distance, you're a little afraid to get near them. Now, again, we have the extreme cases, but the giving the hard time is a very taking away influence habit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, again, why do we do it? We do it, even humor. We do it, you and I do it to one another.
Yeah.
And it's often in humor, I give you a hard time, but there's a subtle thing where if I knock your peg down a little bit,
right.
I stand a little taller.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, then you do it to me and we kind of,
yeah.
It's a bit of a game sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes there's truth in the game.
Yeah. And sometimes we don't know when the truth is the truth and when it's just the game.
Yeah. And it's like, do not accuse a man for no reason when he's done you no harm.
Right.
I remember my cousin when he was 5 years old, he was kind of a shorter, now he's my height and so on, but when he was a kid, he was always smaller.
Right.
And there's a story when he was 5 years old, his parents stopped at a rest stop, and there was another 5-year-old that he never met before that was at the rest stop, and he walked over to this kid and just punched him in the mouth.
Whoa.
And my aunt said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I had to punch him before he punched me. And I think there's a little bit of that, like we all have a bit of a chip on our shoulder where we're feeling low, and so there's a tendency to poke
right.
People and to, for no reason
right.
other than I'm feeling bad about me,
right.
so I poke you.
Right.
And you know, and I guess we feel better for a little while, but it doesn't endear the person we just poked.
Right.
People don't want to follow people that are always poking them.
Right. See, and there's where it comes down to influence.
Right.
You actually eventually avoid those people.
Yeah, because it's just abuse.
Not keeping your word. Proverbs 3:3, let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart.
Yeah, I think that's an integrity thing. And
yeah.
I think ultimately people follow or want to follow truth.
Right.
What is true?
Right.
And if you're not true, I can't trust what you say. How can I follow anything? Even when you say nice things to me,
right.
you could be trying to manipulate. I don't know. I don't
right.
know what you're doing.
Right.
I can't trust what you say.
A duplicitous person.
Yeah. How can I follow that if I don't know? Even the good stuff. You're saying good stuff, but I don't know. Maybe you're just manipulating. Maybe
right.
you want something.
Right.
And I don't know when it's going to zing me.
Right.
It's just, it's very hard to follow someone who's distrustful.
And some of the, like, car salesmen.
Yeah.
The sale, you know, in a lot of ways, if you're, you know, ministry is a promotional type of thing.
Yeah.
Too. And there, you wonder where those subtle places are
yeah.
where we're making things, you know, not quite reality because we want a certain thing, and even in ministry.
Right. Yeah.
And I think this one is one of those areas where, I mean, the obvious ones, you know, I don't lie. I keep my words. If I say I'm going to do something, I say it. But where it gets more complicated is when we exaggerate something,
mm-hmm.
trying to, you know, I know that I do fundraising here. I've got to raise a lot of money. And
mm-hmm.
I remember as a young fundraiser being more exaggerative
yeah.
of things. And I've learned is, you know, if something's going to be about asking for money, just get it out there. Say, George, I want to come to you and talk a little business, a little fundraising. Is that okay? As in the past, I would just call somebody up and then I'd talk about this. George, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, it's like, you know, and I think that many people were a little afraid, you know, of talking to me because I wasn't clear about all of what
they don't
I
know when you're at talking about golf that you really want to talk about fundraising.
Right.
And right now we're just talking about golf so you can get to that. I don't know when you're doing it or not doing it.
Right.
Whereas if you come straight forward and go, hey, let's just golf, or you say, hey, can we talk a little business before we golf?
Yes.
Then everything's they know what's coming, they're ready,
And then keep it brief or keep it appropriate.
Yeah.
Or say, can we go out to eat sometime?
Right.
Coffee, and I want to just talk about business. Right. There's a lot of ways that something like this does have impact for being an influencer.
Yeah. Right.
Well, do you see that this has influence in preaching and stuff like that?
Yeah. How, you know, especially when you tell your stories. You like to exaggerate with your own story, right?
Right.
That fish was that big.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was this big, right?
But it was this big.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
It really was.
I know it was. You finally got one.
Yeah, I got one that was actually that big.
Right, right.
All the others were exaggerations. I think, you know, just being generally a person of integrity that if you tell a story of someone else, you don't make it your story.
Right.
You're not afraid to say, you know, this happened to my friend, and then you tell the story. It's subtle little things like that
right.
people realize it's not, again, about all about you. It's
right.
when lying is about protecting yourself. No, I didn't do that.
Right.
You know, if you fell short on something and someone calls you out on it, I don't want to feel then I give an excuse or something. I just don't want to own it.
Right.
And I just think that a person who comes off full of integrity, they own their mistakes.
Right.
They admit when they make a mistake. They don't exaggerate things to get what they want. If it's a bad thing, they just say it, you know. And this could hurt the sale of this car, but the tires aren't very good. I'm just going to be honest about that.
Yeah.
And now people trust that.
Yeah.
And now when you do recommend a car, they believe that what you're saying is true. They trust you.
Right. You know, one that's related to this about your word is if you say you're going to be there at this time.
Right.
To
go against that.
Right. I'll be there at 3:00 and you're there at 3:15.
And if he doesn't care about me and my time, does he care about me?
Right.
So how can he influence? How can you influence someone that they think you don't care?
And again, there are times when you oversleep. There are times when you have to feed the dog. You forgot you to go back, feed the dog or else, you know, and then you're 5 minutes late. We're talking the habits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're an habitually late person, that is an issue with your word.
Yeah, indicator.
It's an indicator. Anyway.
Yes.
Manipulating people.
All right. Do not say to your neighbor, come back later. I'll give it to you tomorrow. When you know you have it with you.
Ooh.
That's kind of lying, too, isn't it?
Yeah,
I guess
it is.
Manipulating is sort of a lying thing. Right?
They're related very much.
Yeah. So why doesn't that work? I'm trying to influence you, but they get the sense that I'm manipulating them. Why doesn't that work?
Well, I think they know it's all about you, and you're pretending it's not.
Okay.
And then you're giving the impression that it's about them. Oh, I'll pay tomorrow. Or when you really have it is a form of control.
Right.
Mischievous.
Right.
Somewhat.
So I'm trying to control you, not influence you.
Right.
Now I'm going one step beyond influence. Influence, what's nice about influence is I'm just trying to help you and give you an influence, but it's up to you.
Right.
I don't control you.
Right.
Your life is your life.
I respect you for you.
Yes. Now, I'm trying to help you go down a certain trail, but I'm not trying to force you to go down that trail. Manipulation is, I'm going to talk like all I'm doing is influencing you, but all I'm doing, I'm really forcing you. I am arranging things in such a way that you have only one direction to go.
Right.
And then it's manipulation, because I'm not just presenting something to you and letting you decide for yourself.
Right.
And some people want to be manipulated and
right.
controlled, but eventually a lot of times people figure that out.
Right.
It's hard to figure out sometimes.
It is.
So you can get away with manipulating people for a while, but over time, I think people want out
yeah.
of that relationship.
Right.
So
right.
if you find yourself, you know, with people and it seems to go well for a while and then it always breaks up,
right.
it might be because you're more manipulating than influencing.
Mm-hmm. I think of a leader, this one is like a subtle heart check, gut check, truth check. You have to really be self-aware and honest on this one, because, you know, what is it that is about them? What is it about glorifying God? What is it about your own self-interest? You know, this goes back to the walk with God one. Like,
yeah,
to really have that yeah. sincere walk with God.
Right.
And when it is about you, you're transparent.
Right.
Now, George, I want to talk about business, you know, about fundraising.
Right.
You know, I'm going to talk about this right here.
Right.
You know, it's not, I say this, I do this, and then talk about this.
Right.
It's just being that transparent yeah. person.
Yeah. I think part of it is you, when you manipulate, when you have a certain goal and end in mind and you want it to go that way only.
Right.
This is so parenting a lot of times is that
right.
a parent will say, look, you know, if you come home late tonight at 10:30, you know, you have to work with me all day Friday.
Right.
Okay. But I'm giving you a choice. You can come home tonight at 10:30 or you can come home after 10:30 and work with me all day Saturday. So the kid comes home at 11.
Right.
So what happens? The parent comes out and berates the kid for a half an hour,
right?
You know, shouts at him, talks to him, gives him a lecture, and then says, "And you know what? This Saturday you're going to be working with me."
Right.
Now, so the original deal really wasn't the original deal.
No,
because the parent, if he was telling the truth, should have said, "Look, you can come home at 10:30. Everything will be great. If you come home at later than 10:30, you're going to have to work with me all day Saturday, and you're going to get a half an hour lecture." From
right,
me,
right.
and I'm going to be really angry at you and belittle you and do whatever I can do to shame you. That would have been the truth.
Yes.
But you presented it like it was, you know, hey, you have an option. I don't care which
right.
one you do. It's up to you.
Right.
Well, it wasn't really true because you had one thing in mind.
Right.
You will be at home at 10:30. And when I give you a choice, it's not really a choice.
Right.
Well, then people feel manipulated and feeling pushed. You're not really,
right.
you're saying one thing, but you really don't mean it. Because if you meant it, you'd just meet your kid at 11 o'clock. You'd come home late. You'd just go, well, I'm just so glad you chose to work with me all day Saturday. I mean, it'd have been nice if you'd been home 10:30, but I'm okay either way. I yep. give you a choice, and you chose. We'll see you Saturday.
Right.
With and a smile on my face.
That's right. And a little father-son time.
Yes.
Being passive aggressive.
Right.
Proverbs 10, verse 18. He who conceals his hatred has lying lips. Another form of mistruth there.
Yes.
And whoever spreads slander is a fool.
So what is passive aggressive? It's a term that we use a lot. It's I don't know if people know what it means.
Okay. So
passive aggressive. Those are two opposite words.
Okay. So I'll tell you a story. Okay. So I was playing golf with one of my golf partners. And we were in our second day of tournament, and we were in second place, and everything was going really, really, really well. And then second day, my golf partner struggled all day, couldn't find the fairway, all the other stuff like that, so we didn't win. And at the end, we were just bantering a little bit, and I was angry.
Yeah.
I wanted to win.
Right.
It's true. And so I said something like, oh, my, maybe next year if you can find the fairway, we could win. Yes, I can't believe I said that. Now, my partner was, that's a little passive aggressive. And I went, I said, you're right, that was. I so apologize. I sometimes my winning gets out of hand, and then we all laughed about it. And I was glad that he actually mentioned that to me, because I would have gone home. I'd have felt really bad about it. Oh, look at me, just throw that shot, that passive aggressive. And generally, I am not.
So what made that passive? Because aggressive is just, you know, but passive is like sitting back. So how is that sitting back? How is that what you did?
Well,
not
we're,
just aggressive.
Well, we're just talking about the day and everything that, and about the putts we made and everything that. But I was mad.
But did you? But did you have mad face on? Or did you have
I had a smile face on. Yeah, I know.
Okay, so that's what makes it passive, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I'm really mad. I really want to say, you know, what happened here? How come you couldn't hit a thing? I mean, haven't you been practicing?
Which would have been another violation.
But at least it would have been truthful, right? That's how you really felt. Like, did you practice? Wasn't this tournament important to you? Did you, you know, what's the deal? Are you a choker?
Did you go to sleep last night early enough? Why did you go to sleep?
Yeah, right. But that would be too harsh.
Yes.
So then what we do is soften it.
Yeah.
And so what? So we're really communicating the same thing.
Right.
It's just we soften it and we think it's going to be more acceptable that way.
Yes.
But generally people figure it out.
Yes.
Even though you said it as a joke, they get that that's what you mean.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so this is so rampant in the church, because we're not supposed to be aggressive in the church. The Bible, we've got to love one another, you know, love your enemy, you know, all that stuff. And so we know that.
Right.
So then we can't be aggressive, but we're still upset with all kinds of people, so we become passive aggressive.
Yes, yeah.
How do we soften this? How do I give a subtle little hint that I'm not happy without saying it?
Right.
Well, but people figure it out.
Well, and I think as a leader, an influential leader, we avoid those public moments. I mean, like a political, in the political seasons, there's always things. And then there's certain things you say that you can sort of do a little swipe, but you still can call them in God language.
Yes.
You know, or you know, you can say how much you accept that person, but then you have to point out the one thing that makes everybody know that we Christians don't agree with that worldview, but it's sort of like a little bit of a, you know, a passive aggressive, or we're working with actually, you know what, we all do this, and you know you do this too, in marriages, to children, as a leader. So now I'm going to take this one and go back to life coaching. How would this is a very practical thing. If I came to you and helped me be less passive aggressive, Steve, you're my life coach, and I know this is on my list.
Right.
How would I even think about this one?
So again, it would be, you know, I would first of all turn it back on you and say, you tell me, how do you think you can fix this?
Ah.
So now you're sitting there going, I don't know. I got the problem. Okay. How do you know you have the problem? Well, people have talked to me and said this to me. Oh. So you have learned some things by talking to other people? So what idea could you maybe come up with that that is along those lines? And they go, I suppose I could ask people. I could, yeah, well, could we make a list? Who are the people you need to ask next week, do I do this?
Right.
Your wife, your husband, your kids, people at work, people at church. Make a good list of 10 and go, okay, go do that. We'll meet next week. Tell me how it went.
Right.
Now you come back. How'd it go? Yeah. People said, you know, they had this story, this story, this story. Okay, so how do you feel about that? I really got this problem. I didn't know I had this problem. I thought I had this problem, but I really do. Okay. So now let's talk about how, so now you're more aware of it.
Right.
So it's these coaching things where, okay, so now what can we do that could make you more aware of when you, you know, when do you tend to do this, when you're threatened, when you're...
Right.
So it's just getting them to understand more about it, and then, okay, so what solutions can you come up with again?
Right.
You know, I can come up with 100 solutions.
Right.
Try this, try that. Put a note in your pocket. You know, it says passive aggressive, and just take it out and look at it every hour.
Right.
I don't know. There's a thousand things we could try, but I have to get you to brainstorm the ways of trying to deal with this rather than me telling you again. But a lot of these things are just awareness.
Right.
Right. You know, you're aware that you do this. Because a lot of times we're not.
Right. In fact, I would imagine that if we actually did that exercise and we remained humble and joyful in the process. I think it would be very hard. We might find things out like, you know, sometimes when you pray, you're judgmental in your prayers.
Right.
Oh, pastor, sometime, you know, yeah. Or as right. a leader, I notice that
right.
you are always yes. passive-aggressive in this situation.
Yeah. Your prayers could be, dear God, you know, help us as a church to be more loving and caring and not always critical of the pastor. I mean, of people in their right. sermons. I mean, when they talk,
right.
you know, because three guys have just criticized you, so then you use the pulpit to right. get back at them.
Right.
You know, let's be more like Christ and accepting people as they are. You know, finally came up to you and said, you know, pastor, I'm just not getting anything out of your sermon. So this is your rebound. And it's, you're not doing it to them, you're just
right.
praying.
Yeah,
I know, but it's prayer with a bite.
I know. I remember one time when I was working on being transparent and truthful all the time. And one of the mentors I had, this was in Chicago years and years ago, said, I had that problem too, and it related to my own self-loathing. I thought, what do you mean self-loathing? Well, essentially, I'm aggressive and even passively aggressive to myself.
Right.
You know, now for me, I started like analyzing and prayerfully analyzing right. and talking to some mentors that, you know, some of these things are deeply embedded in right. discussion, in prayer. Right. But I know for me, I had to own
right.
the process
yes.
of why am I passive aggressive?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Against themselves. I have one pickleball guy that I play with, and he's overweight. And then when he hits a bad shot, I'm a fatty, you know.
Yeah.
I just, you know, and he's making fun of it, but he hasn't just dealt with it. That's something that holds him back. It does
yeah.
bother him.
And it hurts his influence.
It hurts his influence, but instead of just dealing with it directly, he makes a joke out of it. Because
right.
he thinks other people are thinking that of him, so
right.
he's just going to say it.
Well, that does bring up a good point, that humor is often the passive-aggressive
yes. forum,
vehicle,
yeah.
car
yes.
that we drive
yes.
to bring home
yes.
a point.
But people get it.
In marriages, I think so many of you understand this. And you do it, and you receive it, and it just takes away love in the home. So it is I can see why this life coach, minister reach and program will be very effective
yeah.
for many people, because it deals with some of the things that hold us back anyway.
Right. So the positive of this is to, like in Ephesians, speak the truth in love.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we don't want to speak the truth to somebody because it will be too harsh.
Right.
And then we soften it by making it passive, but it still does the same thing as the
right.
harsh thing. Instead of speaking the truth in love would be, you know, like you just mentioned, a friend of yours who asked you before he gave his criticism or
right.
a helpful hint, could I tell you one thing that I saw in the event that I that might be helpful. Can I do that?
Right.
And then you said, yeah, okay.
Right. Ask permission.
He asked permission, which made you feel you're more in the teacher role because you're giving permission.
Yeah.
You know what? I give you permission to criticize me.
He's
giving you a little bone to stand on, a little
right.
platform to stand on, instead of you're no good at this, and I'm just pushing you into the
We were talking about our banquet, and we had various people come. It was an exciting banquet on September 4th, 2019. Doug DeVos was our speaker. We had a wonderful time. So I was calling various people, thanking them for coming, and this one man is just very respectful, and instead of saying, you know, you missed this ball, why didn't you do it, or, you know, I can see that you're somewhat new at these banquets because you missed out,
yeah.
you know,
you missed
that's passive-aggressive,
yeah.
you know, he's going here to make this
yeah.
point
yeah.
If he didn't like something, but he was just so sincere and direct. We just love the banquet. Would you like to hear the one thing that we noticed that could make the banquet better? Are you into the feedback time yet?
Yeah.
And I said, sure, I'd love it. He said, well, you missed that. In our opinion, it would have been great to have like the Wikipedia view, 30,000-foot view. Like, what is Christianity Institute? Because, you know, if you're there for the first time, you might not know. And I was like, thank you, thank you, thank you. But he just was no aggressive, passive, just transparent, all of those things. And I appreciated that greatly.
Right.
One more yet today, being impatient with others.
A patient man has great understanding.
You know, I like how the Proverbs write sometimes, because it, in a sense, when the Proverbs are writing, they're writing from the perspective, it's a hidden perspective, but it's always on the mind. You know, what is an influential man that's well-suited in his community and well-suited with God and makes the difference? A patient man has great understanding.
Right. So how is that true? How does that help? How does that help with influence?
I know that if I'm around a leader and I feel like I'm not changing fast enough, I'm not getting this soon enough, I'm not pleasing this person the way that person wants to be pleased, and that person exhibits frustration with me because he doesn't want to waste his time with me. Now again, assuming I would be teachable, I'm not saying to someone who, if
I'm so teachable. I think that, see how, what I just did? I just interrupted you.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't patient enough for you to finish your sentence.
Right.
And that's what people do in a conversation. You're telling a story, and all of a sudden we're talking about something, and then you slip into a story.
Right.
Oh, brother, this is going to be a 5-minute thing, maybe.
Right.
So I'm going to cut you off. I don't want to listen to it. I got your point already.
Yeah.
I don't need a whole story to illustrate it.
Right.
So I cut you off. And it's like, I'm... Whereas if I just relax and listen to a 3-minute story when I already got the point, it only cost me 3 minutes.
Right.
And all I've done is encourage you and make you feel like you're heard,
right,
and that I'm listening to everything. And now when it's my turn to maybe counteract what you just said, you just might listen to me, and I might just have an influence over you. But I don't have the patience for that. Because
right.
I think a lot of times, you know, when someone's talking, they're thinking about what they want to say,
right,
and not really listening.
Right. And that lack of impatience hurts their influence.
Right. Because if you're not going to listen to me, I'm not going to listen to you.
Right. That's good.
So your patience is the payment. You know, I guess, you know, there's that saying, you know, seek to understand before being understood. You
right.
want someone to understand your point of view, you
right.
better first try to understand theirs, which if you truly do, you'll be able to speak into their lives a lot easier because you know
right.
who they are.
Right.
So I fall into this. I majored in psychology. Someone talks, I know who you are right now.
Right.
And maybe I do.
Right.
But the problem is that person doesn't have confidence that I know them.
Right.
And the only way that that person will have confidence that I know them is that I patiently listen to everything
right.
that they have to say and not just say, I know you.
Right.
And so they're not going to listen to me. Because, again, if a person doesn't have a sense that you care about them.
Right.
You're not going to influence them.
Interesting. Well, that's it for today. We will continue our discussion on how to be an influencer.